Oh, it's so much better that I can see you a bit now because I'm looking and finding so many wonderful friends. When you do this sort of thing, you're always looking for a friend, just so you know. My name, this is all was asked to tell you, that my name is Stan. What you really need to know is I'm Leanne's husband. So, we're going to do Elijah just for a bit, and then we'll go, and then you'll get Elijah tonight and tomorrow night and the next night and the next night and however many nights it goes. I've lost track of my nights, but there's a lot of nights for Elijah and phenomenal stories that are iconic and bigger than life. And I laughed in my own mind when I realized when I relate to Elijah, it's when he was ready to quit. That's the part I go, oh, I get him now. So it dawned on me that not everybody can be a John Glenn. If you're from Ohio, I just like you already because John Glenn is from Ohio, and he was iconic, bigger than life, did all these wonderful accomplishments, over the top, overachiever kind of a guy. In many ways, the opposite of me, as I think about John Glenn. He was fighter pilot in a couple of different conflicts. He was good at that. In fact, he was so good that the famous Red Sox slugger Ted Williams said about John Glenn, and you would know that in Korea, Ted Williams was John Glenn's wingman. And Ted Williams says, John Glenn, the best I ever saw, he was fearless. And Teddy Baseball was no slouch himself. He was good at all kind of things. And John was the first American to orbit the Earth. He did three orbits in 1962. And so far, it's like, John, you're just way out there. But then in 1964, John has an event that I can relate to. John slipped in the bathroom and hit his head on the edge of the tub. I'm like, yeah, I'm with you now, buddy. I know what it feels like to slip. I can't talk about this, but I remember the last time I slipped in the shower. Now, in my own defense, I had a broken foot, so I was kind of one leg in it just trying to get clean. And I knew as soon as I fell, I thought, well, Leanne heard me and she will come. And she did. And she did. John Glenn hit his head on the side of the tub. He had some trouble with his inner ear, and it affected him really from then on. He did go on, as you probably know or have read, to lead RC Cola. You know, RC and Moon Pie, RC Cola. That RC Cola. And then he did three terms in the U.S. Senate. So he's big, monumental, but the part I relate to him is when he slipped and fell and hit his head.
Yeah.
Now I can connect. Elijah, and this is just me, Elijah is a bit of the John Glenn of the prophets for me because Elijah is also big, iconic, over the top, all these amazing, mind-blowing events. A few quickly, and you'll probably hear more about some of these, all of these, in the coming evenings. He prayed about the weather and it worked. I've prayed about the weather before with varying degrees of what I would term success in the moment. Now here's one. There are only a handful of times in the whole Bible, I'm talking Genesis to Revelation, the whole thing, roll it out. There's only a handful of times when people are raised from the dead and Elijah's in one of those stories. Because, you know, he's praying about the weather and it didn't rain for three and a half years. And then he prayed again and it rained, of course. But during that time when it wasn't raining, there was a big drought, famine, all of that. And God says, I got you. All you got to do is get east of the Jordan River, camp out by this brook, and I've got birds that are going to bring you food morning and evening, morning and evening. birds. I'm trying to say the word birds. How? He didn't even have to Dr. Doolittle it. That God just sent those, and that's great. So kept him alive. Brook runs dry because there's a drought. And God says, I still got you. I need you to go north to Zarephath. There's a widow there. She's going to feed you and feed you and feed you. And so he goes and he sees her at the well and he says, I'd love a drink. And by the way, if you could spare some food, she says, love to. This is all I got left. I was about to cook it for me and the boy. And then that may be the end of us. And he said, do it, do it. And she did it and did it again the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And her oil and her flour did not run out. That's a big deal. I mean, you go to the grocery store, right? And you have to go to the grocery store again. What if you went one time and it just, that was it? It's like, I did that like 3 years ago. That was my grocery store run. Well, that's Elijah and this widow. And then that runs out. And then I said, he raised the boy back from dead because the widow's son that was feeding Elijah every day, every day, every day, her son dies, and she blames Elijah and blames Elijah's God. And so Elijah goes out, talks to God, and then lays out flat on the boy, and he comes back to life, brings him back. Huge. That's big. That's big. And then the one we all know about is when he meets Obadiah, not Obadiah the prophet from later on. That's later in history. This is Obadiah that was working for King Ahab, and he said, I want you to round up all the people in Israel, and let's meet out at Mount Carmel because we're going to have a big showdown because they were trying to decide who is God. Elijah's God or all these other gods? Is it Baal or is it Asherah? Like, let's just decide it once for all. And so they do, and they build altars. And Elijah, the cool thing here is Elijah says, we'll do it on your home court. We're going to the breadbasket of North Israel. We're going to the seat of fertility, Mount Carmel. We're going to overlook the sea, and we'll even use a bull, which was the number one symbol for the fertility cult of Baal. And they cut up the bull, and they get it ready, and then the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 of Asherah prophets, they pray, and they pray, and they pray, and they pray. And Elijah says, you know, maybe he's gone. And then they pray some more, and he says, well, you know, maybe he's asleep. And they do all kind of things that was common for their ritual and still nothing, nothing, nothing. And then it's Elijah's turn and he says, dump it with water. Dump more water on it. And then dump more water on it. And when it's done, he says, oh, Lord, let's show them. Let's show them that it's you, that you, that you are the one true God. And then fire comes down in heaven. It burns up everything. Burns the bull, burns the wood, burns the stones, licks up the water. And it's like, phew. And then everybody says, oh, the Lord is God. And he says, well, let's do away with all these prophets. And they do, and it's rough. That's rough business. That's rough business, but that's a big day. I'm a little winded just going through it. And then Elijah says to Ahab, Ahab, the rain's over. I mean, the rain's coming. The famine's over. The drought's over. It's coming. You better get down to Jezreel, which was one of the residential palaces for North Israel at the time. And depending on how you go from Mount Carmel to Jezreel in the valley, it's at least 25, 30 miles. It's a long haul. And guess what Elijah does? This is a big deal thing. Anybody run? Does anybody run? You're going to love this story because what Elijah does is he wraps up his... I was girding up my loins. I don't know if it looked like things were coming apart, but this is what it feels like to me. Things are coming apart. Anyway, he girds up his loins and he outruns King Ahab in his chariot all the way to Jezreel. He gets there first. Ha ha. And Ahab gets home and Jezebel, his wife, she says, how was your day? And he tells her and she's like, you can see smoke coming out of Jezebel's ears. And she says, send word to Elijah. If he's not dead by this time tomorrow, then it's on my head. And Elijah knows that. Can you imagine getting that word? You've just had, which is the literal mountaintop experience. It went really well for you. Then you outran a chariot pulled by a horse. That's pretty cool. Only to find out, wait, I've got about 23 hours and 10 minutes left. Because Jezebel was the queen of Israel, and she meant business, and he knew it. And so he ran. He ran for his life. He ran south. He left his servant in Beersheba, which is about another 80 miles from Jezreel. And then He goes another day's journey into the wilderness. I love the wilderness. I love the wilderness because in many aspects, when you're reading through the biblical narrative, when you get to the wilderness, you know you're about to meet God. You're about to come in contact with the divine and hear the calling that's on your heart that maybe you were slow to forget. And Elijah gets about a day's journey in, and he's hungry and he's tired. He's had a lot going on, and he decides, I can do it. The trick is getting back up, right? He says, I'm not going to lay all the way down, but he laid all the way down. He's just tired. He says, I'm done. I had a good run. This is good. God, I'm no better than my fathers. You can kill me now. He says that. That's what he's thinking. Now, imagine for just a bit, because we're in the wilderness south of Beersheba, but there's stuff going on in heaven too, right? Because God's seeing this. God knows he's got his man on the way from Jezreel. He stopped in Beersheba. He went further south, and he's ready to call it a day. He's going to throw in the towel. He said, I've done enough. It's over. This is it. And so the angels that go collect our spirits when we pass, I wonder if they said, well, do we go get him now? He's just said he's ready to go. Do we go get our guy? And God says, no, go get him some food because I'm not done. Huh. And they do. And the next thing Elijah knows is he's awakening with the smell of, man, do you smell that bread? That sounds good. And so there's an angel tapping him and says, get up and eat. And he does. But he's still thinking, it's over, I'm done. Good run, I'm dying. Just kill me now. But at least I die with a full belly. And he goes back to sleep and the angel taps him again. And he says, get up, eat some more, eat. Because you got to go a long ways. I'm stopping for just a second. I want you sometime before you pillow your head tonight to thank people that have awakened you when you needed to wake up. Thank you. Thank you. Your joy wakes me up because you have more joy than I have. And there are times when I'm not feeling a lot of joy and I see you and I go, well, Julie's joy, I'll be joy for at least another hour or two. And then I'll need some more joy. I remember one time Henry was kind enough to ask me to speak somewhere. So we went to lunch and I thought, if I confess enough, he'll change his mind. And I confessed and I confessed and I confessed. And he said, no, that's, we're good. And I thought, I haven't confessed enough then. But I'm so grateful that you tapped me and helped me wake back up. And you have those stories. You have those stories about people in your life. I mean, I'm just going to say it quickly because I don't want to blubber. But Ken helped me wake back up. And Ken's a great guy. And we love Ken. And we remember Ken. And Ken's cheering us on from up high. Yeah. But how many people did Ken wake up in his life? Who's tapping on you saying, hey, you're not done. You're not done. You got more in you, because that was the angel of God to Elijah who had said, it's over. Oh, it's over. That sounds like me. It's over. God says, no, get an angel down there. Wake him up. Feed him. Let's go. So you're going to thank people that have tapped you and awakened you. And the other trick is, and this is no trick, look around and see if you need to help wake anybody up. Because life is hard. I remember once when I was in my 20s, I heard a guy speak from North Ireland, and he says, if you haven't suffered yet, you will. And I thought, I don't get that, but I do now. Life is tough, and it can kick you hard. And so if you see somebody that says, you know, I may just call it good right here. I've done enough, and let's just call it a day. I want you to get in there, get with them, tap them, wake them up, feed them if you need to feed them, but say something from your heart to their heart. I love the old line that says, a good friend is one that knows the songs to the words in your, knows the words to the song in your heart. That's how it goes. A good friend is one that knows the words to the song in your heart. And when you forget them, they sing them back to you. Yeah. So where are we? We got to get to Mount Horeb. It's a long way. So he goes, and he goes, and he climbs the mountain. He goes in the cave, and he hides back there in the cave. And then God comes and says, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he says, I want you to come out to the front of the cave. This is like the front of the cave. Careful, don't fall off the cave, because he's on a mountain, right? And then God sends this whirlwind. Like, it's a serious wind. You can think tornadic kind of a wind. God's not in the wind, and then, you know, then there's earthquake. It's like, have you ever been in an earthquake? I've only been in two that I knew of, and they're unsettling. No pun intended. I mean, they really are. They kind of throw you off because you're used to terra firma and think, okay, this is good. But if you've been in one, it's like, oh, mess is rattling that shouldn't normally be rattling. This is what you want to do in an earthquake. I'm at the front of the cave, right? But that wasn't God either. And then there was a fire. You know, fire, fire, oh, fire. I don't want anything to do with fire. No, stay away, fire, bad. But God's not in that, and then God comes. And you know, because it's a great story, and we heard it in communion. That was in a whisper. Isn't that perfect? Because if God came as something big, I would be afraid. I'd say, God, can't hear that. I'd been like the children of Israel. Oh, just let Moses do all the talking. I can't stand this. But God comes in a whisper, and he says, and you know what God says? Here's what God says. It's in the next verse. I'm somewhere in 1 Kings. Elijah, what are you doing here? 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 There's so many ways to hear that, right? Basically, what he's saying is, Elijah, buddy, you're not done. I'm not finished with you. I need you to go back the way you came. Go up north. I want you to anoint two kings from two different countries. He's going to affect political outcomes in two different countries. And I want you to pick your replacement. Anoint Elisha, the next prophet of Israel. Okay. All right, here we go. Yeah, yeah. Oh, they told me what time to quit, so this is great. I can see it. I know when to... You got to pick your replacement. All of you, you have to pick your replacement, because there's one of you with gifts and callings in your heart that you know, even if you're not wanting to let it out, you know, God has placed things in me that, man, this feels like it's my thing to do. Well, what do? You got to pick your replacement. Got to find them, got to train them. It would sound like, and the 11 disciples went to Galilee to the mountain when Jesus appointed them, and he said to them, all authority, guys, all of it, heaven and earth, it's all mine now, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to go everywhere. Go everywhere and make disciples of all the nations. I want you to baptize in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and I want you to teach them everything that I commanded you. And remember, I am with you guys forever. That's the key to picking and training your replacement. Go make them like you. Jesus didn't say, go make them like me. He said, go make disciples. What are you? Well, you're a disciple. That should be easy, right? I could train anybody that would listen to me how to be a left-handed Iron Man. All you got to do is do exactly what I say, because I've done it. I know how to do that. You know how to do disciple, right? You're one. Make sure you replace yourself before you go. It's really key to me, because if I think about what if Elijah had just quit there? We left him on the desert floor 40 miles south of Beersheba, where he wanted to just say, I've done enough. Let's let somebody else do it. I'm ready to go. Well, there's a lot that still happens in the life of Elijah. Where are we? Okay, bang, 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 bang. Okay. Oh, hello, chariot of fire, whirlwind to heaven. He didn't even have to die. You know, sometimes we ask each other, hey, how would you like to die? Which is I don't want that question anyway, but if you do, I'm not going to pick anything hard or awful or brutal. It's like, you know, I don't want to, like, one of those alligator snapping turtles to start at my left foot and go up, because I'm conscious for a long time and it's going to be awful because I feel. So I'm not picking that one. I wonder if I'd be bold enough to say, chariot of fire, whirlwind to heaven. That's how he goes. Like, wow, would he have missed that? I don't know, but he didn't, because he had people that woke him up and said, hey, God's not done, we got more to do. That's a beautiful thing about going and find Peter after the denial. You know what? Because that's what Jesus is saying to Peter. He says, Peter, buddy, Peter, I know you love me, and you're not done. I want you to take care of my followers. You're my guy. You are my guy, Peter. Well, that's cool because Peter had disowned him, had said publicly, I don't even know him. But back over here, talking to Peter one-on-one on the beach, Jesus made sure Peter knew, you are not done. And sometimes that's what you got to do. Guys, I'm grabbing myself, right? You got to get a guy and say, hey, baby, listen to me. And then maybe you slap him on the face a little bit, just something nice, guy stuff, you know what I'm talking about. And you say, hey, pal, buddy, you're not done. Because we need that sometimes, because sometimes I feel like, and we're not done. Oh, we got to go. We're rocking now. Okay. Hello, the last prophet. The last chapter of the last prophet of all of the Old Testament is Malachi. You know what? Malachi prophesies that there's going to be an Elijah to come. And Jesus said, if you can get your mind around it, that was John the Baptist. And it's someone that's going to return the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. And it's going to be about relationship. And then the ground is fertile for Jesus to walk in and do his thing. But John, the Elijah to come, had to be first, the forerunner, to blaze the trail so that all of these obstacles get out of the way and people can get one good, clear look at Jesus. Because if you ever see Jesus, if you ever get a good, clear look, you're changed forever inside. Yeah. And people know it and they'll say, what happened to you? Well, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've met Jesus. And he's great. Okay, and we're not even done yet, right? Because imagine you're God in heaven. Are you there? Like, wow, how do you do that one? Okay, you're God in heaven and there are angels around and you're watching Elijah on the floor, on the ground in the wilderness, and he says, I'm done. Let's go. I'm ready. Take me home. Take me now. And so the angels are saying, do we go get him? We go get his spirit now? And they said, no, go get him some food and feed him because I'm not done with him. And when Jesus is walking to Jerusalem in Luke 9, and he sets his face resolutely to go, and he's got a focus, and he knows it's going to be hard and brutal and no fun, who does God send? God says, I need Moses and Elijah now on that mountain. Boom, and he's there. And what did Elijah get to take part in? The encouragement of the Messiah, the Son of God, to walk faithfully to the cross. Now, could God have gotten somebody else to do it? Sure, he could have got anybody else to do it, but who did he pick? He picked our boy that woke back up. Yeah. You never know if your best days are still to come. The chapters that were yet to be written in Elijah's life dwarfed what was in his rearview mirror. He had so many other wonderful things to step into and to live. As he was anointing, I love the story. I was just reading it like this past week. As the story of, he was a sergeant in the U.S. Army. He was a radio operator stationed 40 miles north of Paris at the end of World War II. He's actually working for Dwight Eisenhower, like the general of the Allied forces. And when they had negotiated successfully the surrender of all land, air, and sea forces for the Germans, Eisenhower sent his chief of staff into the radio room and said, ask their ages. And there were three of them. And this one was 36, and this was 28, and this one was 20. And he said, get the 20-year-old. They're going to send the message. And at that sending of that coded message, 15.3 million people stopped shooting at each other. So it was a big message. And that guy's name was Greg Malikian. And he had been a law student in New York prior to the war, so he went back to New York, went back to law school, became an attorney, then later became a judge, then got interested in investment real estate, started buying and selling, loved to fix up old hotels like the San Carlos Hotel in Phoenix, Arizona, which he did. And he made buckets of money, and here's what he wanted to do with it. This is a guy that at 20 years old, because Dwight Eisenhower said, I want you to tell this story for as long as you live. And at the 75th anniversary of D-Day, Greg was one of the six or seven living veterans who went and took part in that. So he's still telling the story. And in his later life for Arizona State University, he endowed a center for Euro-Asian languages. And this is why he said he did it. Because if we can learn how to talk with each other, maybe we'll start bombing each other's children. Maybe we'll stop shooting at each other if we know how to talk and communicate. The really takeaway for me is when you feel like quitting, thank God for the people that give you a little boost and say, you're not done. Please wake up. You got more to go, because God is not done with us. God is not done with you. God is not done.